Namaste and welcome to another episode of the Startup Operator Roundup. I'm Roshan Karyappa.
And I'm Gunjan Saha. And together we break down the biggest headlines of India's growing startup ecosystem. If this is the first time you're tuning into the channel, then please consider subscribing it for We Talk Everything Startup. And if you're a regular listener, please share this video with your friends and family, rate us on your favorite platform, and leave a comment as to what you think. Hope you like this. Let's get started with the headlines for the week. WhatsApp, which is something that has become ubiquitous in our lives, is now threatening to leave India if it is forced to break message encryption. Now, I do not know how encrypted WhatsApp messages actually are, because if I text you a brand, very soon I'll be getting ads on Instagram and whatnot.
You know what they say.
What do they say?
Advertising in the sheets and encryption in the streets. I've been thinking of that for a while.
Moving on, Razorpay is foraying into building UPI infrastructure. It has recently unveiled its new platform UPI Switch, which is in partnership with Airtel Payments Bank. This is set to power over 10,000 UPI transactions per second. Again, in the banking industry, RBI has now barred Kotak Mahindra Bank from onboarding customers digitally, citing issues with the bank's IT infrastructure. Now, we thought RBI was only going after fintechs, but apparently that is not the case.
No one's immune to RBI's danda.
And again, continuing with some IPO news, Swiggy has gotten shareholder approval for a $1.25 billion IPO. We will be comparing how it stacks up against Zomato's IPO. Along with that, we'll be talking about some fundraisers of the week and, of course, the talk of the town section. So stay tuned as we dive deeper into these topics. Well, I don't know if it is a coincidence, but both of us are wearing Indian.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because we voted for India.
Yeah, I mean, we're all feeling very patriotic, I suppose. I mean, it is election season after all, right? But not a common sentiment in Bangalore, sadly, right? I mean, voter percentage of 50%+ as usual. Even with the huge migrant population here and so on, I was somehow optimistic that, you know, people will come out and vote for development, vote for progress, but that hasn't happened. Karnataka is in the 60s, expected again, right? So this will go on, and June 4th, I suppose, is the when the results will be.
6th, yeah.
Yeah, when the results will be announced. So, yeah, election season. I mean, if you do see, you know, people campaigning and so on and so forth, you know, probably share some water, lassi, whatever with those folks, right? It's hot, man. It's really hot, irrespective of party lines. I mean, these are folks who are out there, you know, showing us how democracy works. So,
well, yeah. I went to the polling booth and I saw democracy works on the backbone of biryani.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a lot of restaurants offering like free dosas, coffee, someone offering ruabs also, apparently. Yeah. So, interesting, interesting times.
So, did you vote? Who did you vote for?
I voted for progress and development.
Nice.
I mean, it's no surprise, obviously. Right.
Okay, so let's get started with the lead story. WhatsApp, which counts India as one of its largest markets in the world in terms of user base, they have now informed the Delhi High Court that the platform would cease its operations if it is forced to break end-to-end encryption of messages. The court is hearing petitions filed by WhatsApp and Meta challenging Rule 4, read with subsection 2 of the Intermediary Guidelines and Digital Media Ethics Code of 2021. This rule mandates that social media intermediaries to enable identification of the first originator of the information when ordered by a court or competent authority. First originator information means who sent out that piece of message, or in this case, information. Now, what this means for WhatsApp is that it would need to store billions of messages over a prolonged period of time. In response to this statement, advocate Kirtiman Singh, who was appearing for the central government, claimed that it is important to trace messages, especially under current circumstances. Now, this current circumstances could mean the election wave. This current circumstances could mean the ongoing geopolitical scenarios that we are seeing playing out. But regardless of what it means, what does this mean from a company level as well as from a user level? Because I'm sure this falls under the purview of right to privacy and freedom of speech.
See, WhatsApp needs India as much as we need WhatsApp, right? Where else are they going to get, 400 or 500 million users? That's not going to happen, right? For sure. So, look, I mean, I've always maintained with respect to all these social media platforms and any other type of tech, companies, that the law of the land is supreme, right? You can't function as a supranational entity and be a United Nations unto yourself, right? And decide, what is right and what is wrong. So, it's very simple. If you are operating in a particular country, you just have to obey the laws of the land, right? And the laws of the land are clear, right? I mean, given the scale and the impact that WhatsApp can have, it is necessary for the government to have certain controls and checks in place, right? And irrespective of which government is in the center, for sure, right? I mean, we've seen, election manipulation in the US, right, elsewhere. So obviously, I mean, it is prone to that, right? Look, it's a very difficult task from Meta's perspective as well. I mean, they've been trying to, stifle spam, right? Take care of, all of these malpractices and so on and so forth. But it's very difficult. I think this is more a stance from them, not on any lofty principles as such, because as you mentioned earlier in the comments, they're perfectly fine, using our data for advertising and whatnot, right? But for somehow, I mean, for these kind of things, they put up a principled stand, right? I think it's just a overheads that they're really concerned about, right? There might be scope for some misuse, for sure, right? But I think I would want those matters to be decided by the courts or the government, right? Not by, some company which is headquartered in San Francisco, for sure.
Yeah. But also this end-to-end encryption, right? I think it's really a good rule. But when it comes to matters of national security and stuff like that, I mean, definitely you got to obey like what the authorities tell you.
Absolutely. And this is, it's an equal thing for all platforms as well, right? Mm-hmm. What if an Indian platform goes to the US and starts acting this way, right? I mean, that, hey, we'll file cases, we'll do all of that. I don't think they will take it lying down. In fact, I mean, you've seen all these congressional hearings and so on and so forth in the US, right? They've got every kind of data from, the big guys, right? Whether it's Google or Meta or whoever else. And I don't even want to talk about China here, right? Because, they're the other extreme. So, par for the course, guys. I mean, if you want to operate in India, I think the least you should do is obey the laws of the land, for sure.
Yeah. Before next news, we have some great developments on the UPI front. UPI has become India's favorite mode of payments, right? The numbers are still climbing with the introduction of, paying via credit cards through RuPay credit cards. And UPI is also now offering credit lines via the infrastructure. And this is projected to reach 2 billion transactions per day by 2030. I think now we are closer on 1 billion or something. Razorpay had announced that developing on the UPI infrastructure, they have launched UPI Switch. Through UPI Switch, banks connect with the existing UPI infrastructure to facilitate seamless communication between core banking systems and UPI technology while processing a UPI transaction. This UPI switch will be powering technology service providers for banks. The piece of tech excels in dispute resolution, resolving issues 7x faster within 24 hours than the industry average of 7 days. I think this has been one of the biggest problems for UPI. How many times has it happened that you're making a merchant payment and the money gets stuck somewhere? And when you reach out to the support of Google Pay or PhonePe, it shows that he either check with the bank or wait for 3 to 5 days for the money to be reverted back. Now, UPI Switch promises that this resolution will happen in a matter of 24 hours. Moreover, the refunds will be instantly processed compared to, as I mentioned, the industry average. Razorpay has been at the forefront for innovating in the payments space. They've also acquired a payment aggregator license and looks like there's no signs of slowing down.
Yeah. No, look, my benchmark for payments is very low, right? Because, I was involved in all of this stuff 15, 16 years back. So UPI is a delight for sure, right? But I can see how, some of these developments on the infrastructure front, on the tech front is necessary as the number of transactions scale, right? And as the trust builds and the transaction amounts also increase, right? It's bound to happen. Most of the transactions today are perhaps less than a couple of thousand, right? 80-90% would be of that order, right? But as reliability increases and as people start treating this, almost as an NEFT or an IMPS in terms of the transaction amount, right? Then I think, these kind of changes, these kind of development is absolutely integral for sure, right? So, yeah, kudos to the Razorpay folks. I mean, the fintechs are really showing us that, how much you can do from a tech perspective, right? I think, 15 years back, there was this whole debate about, hey, will fintechs kill banks, right? And I think we've swung the other way around right now, say, almost to the point where we're thinking that, the banks will become fintech sooner than the vice versa, right? But these kind of developments are definitely heartening. I myself, I started out very optimistic, very bullish about the fintech case. And, I've quoted Angela Strange's article on how every company will be a fintech company more than a few times on the roundup itself, right? What I'm realizing is that there are so many nuances to the industry itself, to the business of financial services itself, that it takes a lot more than technology to sort of run a great business here. On that note, I mean, did you hear Anupam's remarks about
Danda?
Yeah, Danda and whatnot.
I think it was some summit where Anupam Mittal, in a panel discussion, he said that Bangalore is a great city where a lot of innovation on the product front happens.
Mm.
But the real business or dhanda happens in cities like Delhi and Mumbai. Well, not saying that he's wrong, but I think Bangalore is changing. Wrong. Bangalore is changing, especially in the past year and a half, 2 years, the whole conversation on profitability and unit economics has been on the rise. I think Bangalore will soon catch up.
Look, I respect Anupam, obviously, right? I mean, he's a fantastic entrepreneur, investor. He's been in the scene for, 3 decades almost, right? But look, brass tacks, guys. I mean, it doesn't hold any water, right? Zerodha, Razorpay, PhonePe. I mean, how many more should I name? And all of these are the largest fintechs and they're based out of here, right? And look, I mean, I'm not even like a region chauvinistic person, right? I mean, I want startup action everywhere in India, right? From Coimbatore to Surat, Kashmir to Kanyakumari, let there be a million startups everywhere, right? And ecosystems should evolve for sure, right? I'm very excited about the fact, for example, that there is a SaaS ecosystem which is very active in Surat, in Coimbatore as well, right? So obviously, I mean, startup action should be spread out, right? Investments should flow into all of these different cities and VCs should go and set up firms in all of these different places.
Hmm.
But I don't know, man. I mean, all this, like, it seems like a very sort of a broad brushstroke to kind of paint, right? I mean, we do obviously know how to build businesses, which is why, I mean, Bangalore is the startup capital, is the VC capital, is all is like probably like 60%, 70% of the ecosystem in India, right? And obviously there was a bit of a glut. A bit of a glut is an understatement. There was a huge glut in 2021, right? I mean, it was a bull run of bull runs and things went out of hand, right? But yeah, there has been a correction since then, and this downturn has been good. Has been really good from a startup perspective because people have been forced to be more disciplined, right? Forced to be more focused. Do less of these outrageous experiments, right? Not on the tech or innovation front, but in terms of, spending on acquiring users and giving away like, freebies and whatnot, right? I mean, look, and look at the aspiration also, right? I mean, the aspiration is to go and list today, right? We're talking about Ola listing, we're talking about Swiggy listing, plenty of others as well, right? So if that is your aspiration, then obviously you need to be more fiscally disciplined and they will get there, right? I mean, sure, I mean, I can think that, startups are, more innovative, than conservative on the business front, for sure, right? I mean, it is a new company. Obviously, I mean, it will be the case. I mean, there's this other trope that happens often, right? That, oh, you know what? NCR is the place where startups actually list, right? You have Make My Trip, you have, you know, Zomato, you have Paytm and so on. Guys, if in 5 years that changes, will Bangalore suddenly become the place where startups go and list? I mean, that's absurd. It's completely absurd, right? So don't be like locked into these, you know, my region versus your region and this versus that kind of thing. Some of it may hold true in some very minor cases, right? But overall, startup action should be absolutely democratized, right? Let every city have more startups, more investors, and let it bias to its own strengths, right? Absolutely.
Yeah. No, well said. Wrapping this up, I think it's also very good to see a private player actually building, helping to make the UPI infrastructure better. Because I think a couple of months back, right, we were talking that it's not easy to maintain and keep running the UPI platform. Of course, it has its own expenses, right? What's better than passing on these running costs onto the customer is to see more private partnerships like this.
Yeah, I mean, look, I have also argued that a few thousand crores is nothing, right? I mean, think about like, you know, lakhs of crores for your budgets and whatnot, right, for a nation. A few thousand crores to, you know, run the most sophisticated, the best payment system in the world is really nothing, right? But this kind of stuff where, you know, people invest in technology, invest in infrastructure and development, that is absolutely necessary, right? I mean, people should not like, you know, companies should not just like lay back and try to reap the rewards of everything that's happened so far for, you know, the time oncoming, right? I mean, so yeah, on that front, yeah.
Awesome. So for our next story, we want to start off with this tweet by Ashneer Grover. He says that the irony is banks se tech nahi ho rahi aur fintech se banking nahi ho rahi. He was referring to the recent notice by RBI, which bars Kotak Mahindra Bank from onboarding customers digitally. Now, this has been a significant step in which RBI is again showcasing that it puts the needs and the convenience and the safety of customers first. RBI has cited data security concerns as a primary reason why it barred Kotak Mahindra Bank. It raised alarms about the bank's ability to safeguard customer information and maintain a robust data security protocol. For 2 years in a row, Kotak Mahindra did not meet the standards set for managing IT risks and ensuring information security. After checking again, RBI found that the bank still hadn't fixed these issues despite being given specific instructions to follow. In fact, the bank had a major breakdown of its services on April 15th, which troubled a lot of its customers. Therefore, the central bank said it decided to place certain business restrictions on the bank in the interest of customers, which may seriously impact not only the bank's ability to render efficient customer service, but also the financial ecosystem of digital banking and payment systems. Well, we thought RBI was only going after the likes of Paytm and other fintech companies, but looks like no one is to be spared.
Yeah, I mean, RBI is pretty secular in its, danda, right? Look, if they've warned them for more than a couple of years, then I suppose some kind of action is warranted. Same in the case of Paytm also, right? I mean, they received some 7 or 8 warnings on the KYC front before they actually took some action, punitively, right? Well, what can I say? I mean, systems have to definitely be upgraded. And these banks and insurance companies, they're a lot of them are running on really dated systems, right? 20, 30 years old, perhaps in some cases. Upgrading those are like a massive challenge. But in all fairness, over the last 10 years, I mean, every bank has tried to, you know, transform digitally, right, and keep up with the times per se. But huge challenge, very, very complex. I mean, obviously, the both of us know a little bit about this, right, having sold to banks and whatnot. I hope the Kotak team is able to recover from this, right, and get back up to speed.
But it's surprising because Kotak Mahindra, I think, the past 4-5 years, they've been pushing the whole 811 product, which is a digital-only bank account and, you know, you get a virtual card and everything. And when I came across the news that, hey, it has had multiple failures on the tech side, it just came shocking for the risk it poses to customers.
Mm.
Right? And it's good that the RBI has taken some action against that. Next up, we have been eagerly waiting for Swiggy's public market debut. And last week, Swiggy received the green light from its shareholders for a public initial offering worth $1.2 billion. The IPO is slated to happen sometime later this year. This will also include a fresh issue of up to 3,750 crore rupees or approximately $450 million and an offer for sale component of up to rupees 6,664 crores or 800 million. Fresh issue means that the company will be issuing new shares to raise capital for itself during an IPO, and offer for sale or OFS means that existing shareholders will be putting up some of their shares to be sold directly to the public during an IPO. To note here, Swiggy was last valued at around $10.3 billion, which was during its last fundraise that happened in early 2022. Let's compare this with Zomato, the other company who, along with Swiggy, runs the duopoly of the India food delivery business. In 2021, when Zomato went IPO, it raised around $1.3 billion. Of course, the share prices had plummeted down, but right now, that has been doing really well. It has consistently been rising. On the market share front, as of the first half of FY23, Swiggy holds 46% of food delivery market share, whereas Zomato dominates with a 54% share. Swiggy recorded a $207 million loss for the 9 months leading up to December 2023 against a revenue of $1.02 billion during the same period. Zomato, on the other hand, is profitable. And according to latest news, people are saying that Zomato's quick commerce delivery arm, Blinkit, that is now more valuable than Zomato's food delivery business.
Interesting.
So a lot of exciting things happening. Swiggy IPO coming up.
Yeah. No, even more shocking than the 200 million loss is the 800 million offer for sale, right? I mean, I don't know what the logic is, behind that. The Indian public retail investors have been extremely critical about this whole OFS, right? I don't know. I mean, even then, I mean, they've kind of priced it at that. It'll be interesting to see how many of these will be from the founders themselves and the leadership themselves. Even if it's a minority, it's not a good look, in my opinion. Right. So hard times. I personally feel that given the markets are at almost all time highs right now. The election results are out in a couple of months. I think I see some small correction coming up. I don't know how, investors will kind of receive this, right? Mm. But in any case, I mean, I think they'll probably list sometime later this year or next year, I think. Right?
Later this year, it's slated. But I mean, we have seen this plans get postponed multiple times.
Yeah, yeah. So that might very well happen sometime next year, I suppose. And hopefully, markets are a little more stable at that time, right? And see, Zomato has been a fantastic turnaround, right? In some sense, right? Yeah. Because once they listed at that massive 40,000 crore valuation, obviously their stock got battered, and they've slowly clawed their way back on the basis of phenomenal execution.
They really consolidated the business well.
Yeah, the first time they made profits, it was due to a tax refund, right? And we all made fun of it. But, since then, I mean, they've steadily sort of narrowed their losses, I mean, to actually turn over a buck, right? And actually become profitable. So maybe these businesses at a certain scale, at a certain, in a certain model of execution can actually be profitable. Right. That's what at least Zomato has probably shown. I hope that, Swiggy pursues that path and that the retail investors are kind to it. Right. Because I personally am a Swiggy fan over a Zomato fan. I order from Swiggy. Right. So, wishing the Swiggy team all the best.
Yeah. Well, one of the primary reasons why Zomato has become a lucrative business is because of the B2B arm.
Mm.
Forgetting what it's called, but it procures fresh,
meat
and vegetables and supplies it to restaurants. And that has not been in the limelight of the business, but it has been doing phenomenally well. We have discussed it a few times in the past.
I think Zomato does half a dozen things of that, right? I mean, they have a POS business, they have a B2B business, there's Blinkit, of course. right? And I'm probably missing like 3 or 4 other businesses that they have. Very interesting. And this whole farm to fork model has been tried before. But it's such a challenging business to kind of execute, right? There's so many moving parts. The supply chain is really complex. And so, you know, your execution has to be phenomenal, right? Because otherwise your margins are hit very badly, right? And it's hard to really make money. But I mean, Zomato perhaps has figured it out. You know? We had the founder of OTP on the platform sometime back, right? I mean, they are fairly recognized in the NCR region, Gurgaon and around that. We'll link to the episode on the podcast. We'll link to that podcast in the description. Hopefully give some work to the producer who's sharing memes and whatnot, right, as we talk.
Right. So this Swiggy IPO is definitely something we'll all be looking forward to. It's Swiggy is one of the largest startups in the country today. And, you know, this company going IPO where at a time when fundraisers have been on the decline, this could be either mean two things. One, it shows investor confidence that the markets will soon have a growth trajectory, or it could mean that they just want a way to offload their shares. Let us know what you think about this in the comment section below. Moving on to the big fundraisers of the week. Starting off, we'll talk about an international company called Rippling. This is an HR tech startup that raised $200 million in a new financing round. And it also signed agreements with investors to repurchase up to $590 million of equity from current employees, former employees, and early investors. This financing round was led by Quetu, and I think the startup is now valued north of $1 billion. Dhruva Space has raised funding worth $9.4 million in a blend of equity and debt financing from investors, including IAN, Alpha Fund, and the Technology Development Board. The funding will be used by the company to set up a 2.8 lakh square feet spacecraft facility. NBFC firm Northern Arc has raised $80 million from the International Finance Corporation, which is a member of the World Bank Group. Fashion retailer Listcraft raised around $26 million from Peak 15 Partners, Prosus, Sofina, and partners of DST Global. Cloud Excel raised around 200 crore rupees, or around $24 million approximately, from NIIF Infrastructure Finance Limited and Aditya Birla Finance Limited. What's interesting to note here is that a lot of the fundraisers this week has been through debt rounds. What does that mean?
No, it's just alternate forms of financing is kind of evolving, right, in these markets, right? I suppose equity has become really expensive. I mean, if you look at it from, a founder perspective, right, I mean, having to give up a lot more equity for the same amount of money, relatively speaking, at least compared to 20, 21, 22 times. So perhaps, I mean, they're evaluating debt, right? I want to call out Rippling here, right? I mean, the reason we're talking about Rippling is for two reasons, right? One, because of Parker Conrad, the founder, and what a phenomenal comeback he has made, right? He built this company called Zenefits. Zenefits was valued at about $4 billion, ran into some compliance trouble, and was kind of unceremoniously removed from that company, right? And since then, he's come back to build Rippling, right? And Rippling is valued at $10 billion, right? Yeah. 2.5 times his previous company. Shows you can't keep a good person down, for sure, right? I mean, and look, I mean, Rippling's really ambitious goal is to be that single system of records for all things employees, right? Now, which means that they're doing battle with multiple, you know, large systems, whether it is Workday or SAP or whoever else, right? And they've managed to go up against these guys and actually build phenomenal, business, right? I mean, they're close to around $400 million right now in ARR, which is pretty amazing. And in these times where everyone is talking about a doom and gloom in SaaS, it's wonderful to hear this kind of a story. That's the first reason. The second reason is because they've built a phenomenal product and engineering team in here, right? And Namma Bengaluru. Yeah. So they've hired some really very, very amazing engineers and so on here, right? I mean, there's a common friend of ours also who's who was hired and who we should perhaps definitely check with for a party, you know. So we should definitely check with them on a party and whatnot, right? But yeah, I mean, they've if you pass by Kormangla, which I'm sure most of you do, startup folks, right? At least we hope you do, right? You might see a lot of these rippling ads, you know, on employer branding, right? Yeah, they've built an amazing team here, right? So for those reasons, I think they're really special for sure. So all the best.
Amazing. Moving on to our talk of the town section, we have this tweet by Balaji Srinivasan. He tweets, "I was ethnically cleansed out of San Francisco. I got out after Democrats started posting signs saying Thai techies come and smashing the windows of Google buses." He also posts a video where a Waymo driverless car was set on fire in San Francisco. He says that when Democrats lit crosses on fire back in the day, they wanted black people out. And when Democrats light self-driving cars on fire today, they want tech people out. It's a very interesting tweet. We'll be linking it in the description. Please check it out. But Roshan, what do you make of this?
It's just sad to see the decline of San Francisco, you know. I mean, such an amazing city, right? Even historically, you know, it was the heart of the hippie movement in the 60s, right? Some amazing music came out of it. Right? Very nice weather. Almost feels like Bangalore. We'll discount this year for sure, right? Bangalore has been burning this year. But great city, great vibes, very, you know, friendly to immigrants. Obviously, a bunch of Indians stay there, right? San Francisco, San Jose, and that area, right? But it's sad to see what's happened, you know. I mean, I was in SF a couple of years back. And believe me, I mean, I felt really unsafe, right? More unsafe in downtown SF than, you know, some of the more shady areas in Bangalore, right?
Okay.
I mean, it's just sad. The decline has been caused by multiple things, right? I mean, obviously, you know, they've elected successive governments that have just been sort of a leech of sorts, right? Increased taxes, you know, all kinds of stupid policies in terms of, you know, what to do with homelessness and drug addiction and whatnot, right? I mean, the kind of public begets the kind of polity in some sense, right? Very profound, deep quote. But it's true, you know. I mean, you see the kind of politics that you want, basically. And I mean, this whole moving to Texas, you know, Austin, elsewhere has been happening for a while, right? I mean, at least post-COVID, it got accelerated. I think Balaji has moved to Singapore.
Yeah.
So,
but will you draw parallels of what's happening in SF to what's happening in Bangalore lately?
Absolutely not. I think Bangalore is like screwed up in a lot of ways, but not even close to what's happening in SF. And I hope, you know, that it never gets to that point, right? But see, the stress on all of these cities is real, right? Which is why, I mean, you need to have these satellite towns, twin cities, whatever you call them, right? I mean, Bangalore, for instance, I mean, Mysore is eminently desirable in that sense, right? Just 100 kilometers, 120 kilometers or whatever.
Rather just 2 hours away.
Yeah, just 2 hours away with the expressway.
That's
and whatnot.
Closer than Kormangla to Whitefield.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, and if you build like one of these high-speed rails and whatnot, I'm sure the commute can come down to 40 minutes or so, right? So why will you live in Whitefield or, you know, wherever else, right? Close to the airport or something. I mean, if you could live in, you know, Vijayanagar and Mysore or wherever, right? Yeah, the Mysore folks are going to hate this. But guys, we're just spreading the love.
All right, folks. Thank you for staying with us right till the end. We hope you enjoyed this discussion. Again, a gentle reminder to go out and vote whenever is the voting day in your constituency. Do read the manifestos, make a sound judgment, and pick a leader that you'd want to see take India forward. Do share this video, like, comment with your point of views on what we discussed today. And we'll be back again with more exciting updates from India's startup ecosystem next week. Take care. Jai Hind.
See you guys. Bye.